This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
If you've used the pill or another kind of hormonal contraceptive, have you had any side effects? And I'm not just talking physical, but mental. Because some people do report impacts on their mental health after starting on various contraceptives. What do we know about that? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Later we're going to talk about this and hear from those who say they kind of had to learn the hard way the pill wasn't working for them.
I felt flat. I was angry, grumpy, sad, irritable, kind of like a shell of myself.
Yeah, I'm keen to hear from you too. Like, if you've stopped taking the pill or another contraceptive because it made you feel depressed, what happened and how did you handle it? Message in 0439757555. Also coming up, we're going to tell you why young people in India are getting behind a cockroach movement and what it's got to do with a medical exam. It's a fascinating story. We'll explain. First, though,
Hack.
A UN inquiry has accused Israel of deliberately targeting and killing Palestinian children in Gaza.
On Triple J.
Yeah, let's start with this inquiry from a UN independent commission. It's been making a lot of headlines over the past day. And as you just heard, it's accused Israel of continuing to commit genocide and atrocity crimes, deliberately targeting Palestinian children. Now, you might not have been hearing much about Gaza over the past little while, so we're going to check in. And joining us is the ABC's Middle East correspondent, Matthew Doran. He's in Jerusalem. G'day, Matt. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries.
Can you tell us a bit more about this UN inquiry and what it's found?
Yeah, so this UN inquiry, this is an independent commission set up within the UN, which specifically looks at issues in this part of the world, specifically looking at the occupied Palestinian territory, so Gaza, the West Bank, East Jerusalem, but also Israel. And it looks at a number of various issues there. This one in particular is looking at the impact of the last couple of years on Palestinian children, particularly in Gaza, but also in the West Bank as well. But some of the findings that it's made with regards to Gaza are, I think, the most concerning or the most shocking that have come out as a result of this report. It says things like Israeli forces deliberately targeted children throughout the course of this war. It's looking at a period of 2 years beyond the October 7 attacks by Hamas, which kickstarted this conflict there. It says Israeli forces were deliberately targeting children in Gaza. It says that the use of weapons by Israeli forces has maximised the number of casualties, particularly among children. It's then also started to touch on things such as the ongoing emotional trauma for Palestinian children, witnessing the horrors of war over many years now, and also, you know, what sort of impact that is going to have on their future. And one thing that really struck me is it has started to look at some of the comments from Israeli politicians in the immediate aftermath of the October 7 attacks and some of the justifications that were almost put out there to suggest why Israel was acting in such a way. And it's listed off some of those quotes in a way that I think it's trying to demonstrate that there is this culture of there being two different classes of people in this part of the world, and almost a justification for Israel going in incredibly hard into Gaza over the course of the last 2.5 years or so.
It sounds significant. Is this in line with previous findings?
It certainly is. And I think that's something that many people have said or would read this report and would say, well, we've known this is happening for some time. But certainly the commission has stepped through multiple instances, multiple cases where it says this is indicative of the concerns that we have. There was one case of a 15-year-old boy who was, along with his family, was evacuating a building in Gaza earlier on in the war. His father heard Israeli drones circling overhead. The young man has picked up a white cloth and started to wave that in a sign of surrender, despite that he has been killed by an Israeli sniper, according to the commission there. Not only shot once, but shot another 2 times after that in what the commission said was an instance of Israeli forces wanting to make sure that they had killed their target there. There's, of course, the other case which has had a lot of attention over the last couple of years, that of Hind Rajab and her family there, a family of 7 who were killed. They were in a car travelling through Gaza They were surrounded. Two paramedics who went to go and try to save them were also hindered from doing that and killed in the process as well. This report is saying that Israeli forces would have known that there were children in this vehicle, yet they have pressed ahead regardless of that. So it's going through these sort of cases. It is saying that it's impossible not to find that children have been targeted in places like this. And it's going and it's looking at statistics as well, saying that around 30% of those who've been killed in Gaza have been children. And that is a higher rate than previous conflicts in Gaza, where it's only been sitting at around 24% or so.
Matt, how has the Israeli government responded?
Well, certainly the Israeli government is very angry at this report. Their response follows a fairly familiar line of rhetoric. Israel very critical of the United Nations, saying it continues to push an anti-Israel political message. It says that this report is flawed, that it's based on things such as unsubstantiated testimony from people on the ground. But this is something that the Israeli government has picked up on. It's also saying that throughout the course of this inquiry, the UN hasn't given enough attention to the impact of October 7 and of the war that happened since. We know that Israeli children were killed in those horrific attacks by Hamas on October 7, 2023. Israel is saying that not enough attention is given to their plight. The commission, in response to that, has said that it has looked at these issues around the Israeli community in the past, that it's given that sufficient consideration. Israel saying not enough has been done there, that it's a passing sort of reference.
And Matt, what's the situation like in Gaza right now? Because certainly a lot of media attention will have shifted to other parts of the Middle East in recent months. What can you tell us about what is happening on the ground?
Yeah, it's a really important question because the crisis remains on the ground in Gaza. Of course, there is a ceasefire which has been in force since October 2025, although many people would argue it is not a ceasefire, considering that more than 1,000 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli strikes during that time. We know that Israel has continued to advance and seize more territory, some estimates suggesting 60%. The humanitarian situation has certainly improved because aid has been able to get in. The hospital system is still under immense pressure and is all but broken there. So it is still a very dire situation for people on the ground in Gaza there, and it's going to take a very long time for that to remedy itself.
ABC Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran, really appreciate your time.
No worries.
Hack.
So how could this happen? And what's the impact on India and its young people?
On Triple J.
We're going to stay overseas now and turn to what has to be one of the biggest exam scandals in the world in a long time. Millions of students in India forced to resit their medical exams this week after it was revealed questions to the first exam had been leaked. But it doesn't end there. The consequences have been huge. Not only have young people united across India in protest, taking to the streets, demanding change from politicians, but deaths have been reported too. Ariana Lucente has been looking into it.
It was hard, but it's over finally.
This is Nilesh, and she's one of more than 2 million students who took their medical entrance exam over the weekend for the second time.
The moment I handed over my answer sheet, I was like, it's like I got my soul back.
It's a 3-hour national eligibility entrance test, and students in India have to take it to get into medical school. Of the millions who take it, only a fraction land a college placement. But after doing the exam a month ago, students were told their results wouldn't count. Following allegations, the questions had been leaked and they'd have to do it again. This is Namya, Nilesh's dad.
We as a parent, we cry, but we cannot do anything.
Last month, about a dozen people were arrested over the exam leak, including a chemistry lecturer who the government says shared the test with his students. It's alleged the questions were spread on social media and sold through apps like Telegram.
The platform was continuously being misused by scamsters, by fraudsters.
India temporarily blocked Telegram in the lead-up to the second test after concerns of leaked questions again. Abhishek Singh is from the country's national testing agency.
By sharing fake question papers as kind of genuine question papers and trying to fool people into paying for those question papers and trying to exploit the anxiousness that students have.
Outside exam centres, security was stepped up the second time around. Soldiers and police officers were deployed, and students had to go through extensive security checks to get inside, including biometric ID checks and metal detector frisking.
We have taken every single precaution to ensure that nobody who is involved in setting up the question papers or translating them or printing them or moving them or storing them till the date of the examination is compromised in any manner.
Even the exam papers were transported by India's Air Force. But not everyone took the test a second time. Since the first test happened, there are reports that several students have died by suicide, including Pradeep Mahich, a 22-year-old who has been trying to get into med school for years. This is Babita, his sister.
He thought he did well, and he was thinking about resitting and what the questions would be and what would happen if he didn't do as well.
Pradeep's family is devastated, and his dad, Rajesh, wants the government to take more responsibility and potentially bring in stricter laws over exam leaks.
We lost our Pradeep, but we can help stop other children from taking that step.
India's Education Minister, Dharmendra Pradhan, promised students a fair and transparent retest. But the exam leak and deaths have led to protests, led by the emerging political activist group, the Cockroach Party, or CJP.
We are the youth, we are the future of India. We can make our India best, but the education is something like the backbone of any country.
The movement started after India's Chief Justice compared some unemployed young people to cockroaches. He later said he was referring to people with fake degrees, but it was already enough to make the hashtag #ITooAmACockroach go viral. Young people have joined the movement over frustration with political dysfunction and failures of the education system. Ashutosh Ranka is a spokesperson from the party.
We are very, very optimistic. We are very, very hopeful that this is the beginning of something big.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente reporting there, and an extraordinary story, and no doubt we'll be hearing more about this protest movement because has gained a huge following in a short amount of time, and we've seen some of those pictures of students on the streets right across India. We'll keep you posted.
Hack.
I don't know if depression is listed as an actual side effect, like on the insert packaging of birth control, but it is a commonly reported side effect.
On Triple J.
Yeah, when it comes to the contraceptive pill, you might have seen that long list of potential side effects that comes with the medication. And while a lot of what's on that list are the physical side effects, mood changes, depression, they're also included. So how common are these mental health side effects, and are we talking enough about them? Especially because now in some states, you can get your pill resupplied by pharmacists without visiting your GP. We're hearing from you on the text line now, like someone saying, I took the pill for a couple of months and it gave me such horrible anxiety and depression, seriously impacted by last years at school along with relationships in my life. So people are reporting that they have suffered mental ill health as, you know, as a link to the medication they've been taking. Michelle Joachim has been looking into it.
I first went on the pill probably around 10 years ago. I would have been 15 or 16, and it was just because of horrendous periods.
Jess is 25 and lives in Adelaide, and she went on the pill hoping it would make her life easier. But instead, it came with some side effects she didn't expect.
Normally, I would have been a lot more energetic and a lot more creative. Really had an effect on mental health, which then had a flow-on effect to, I guess, relationships and the way I related to other people. I noticed that I felt flat. I was angry, grumpy, sad, irritable, kind of like a shell of myself.
Jess says she saw a few different doctors and tried a few different pills to find one that helped her periods but didn't affect her mood.
The worse the bleeding was, the better my mental health, and the better my bleeding was, the worse my mental health was. So I couldn't win. It was a lose-lose situation.
When I saw the big paper of the big side effects, I got a bit overwhelmed and I was like, I don't really want to read that.
Georgia's 19 now, and she went on the pill when she was 15. And even though she was aware of the potential side effects, what she experienced still came as a shock.
I would wake up in the morning, didn't want to go to school most of the time because it was hard to have a conversation with me sometimes because I would zone out.
Georgia found it hard to be around her friends.
I would go from happy to sad, or very hard to control all my emotions. Didn't really feel like a human being half the time, didn't feel like myself.
Today, the pill is the most popular form of contraception in Australia and is also prescribed to treat acne, heavy periods, and hormonal conditions. The most common pills are made up of estrogen and progesterone, the two main female sex hormones. Taking it every day stops the production of natural hormones in the body and prevents ovulation.
It's the woman who pays. But what 500,000 Australian women are paying for these days is the contraceptive pill.
Even though it's been around for more than 60 years, some experts say we've only just started talking about how these hormones can impact mood. In 2016, a massive Danish study found that women taking the contraceptive pill were more likely to be treated for depression. But there's still some conflicting research around the cause. A small 2023 study out of the US showed 43.6% of women experienced mood changes as a side effect at some point, and 83% said their doctor did not talk about these potential side effects. But there are heaps of different pills, and not everyone is sensitive to hormones when it comes to mood and mental health. However, young women and those with a history of mental illness are seen as potentially more susceptible.
When we look at the studies about the contraceptive pill, the mood side effects are generally less common than the physical side effects. That could explain why most of the conversation is about physical side effects.
Dr. Danielle McMullen, a GP and the president of the Australian Medical Association, says mental health side effects of the pill should be part of the discussion. Now in multiple states across Australia, trained pharmacists can prescribe or resupply the pill in efforts to make the medication more accessible.
As doctors, we're concerned that by having more and more different places that people can get medicines, things can get confused, and that you as a patient aren't necessarily getting that individual advice. So our best advice is to always go and talk to your doctor about medicines.
Back to Jess in Georgia.
I think conversations around the mental health side effects of the pill between pharmacists and patients, or literally anyone and everyone for that matter, is so important.
They want mental health to be part of the contraception conversation.
I do believe younger women, even young boys, should know about it. Like, a lot of people should know more about that.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Michelle Akim from BTN reporting there, and a reminder, if anyone does need help, Lifeline is always there on 13 11 14. We're hearing a lot from you now on the text line. Someone saying, I had huge mood swings and sleep changes when stopping the pill. After 10 years, I thought I would take a break, but I couldn't even survive 4 days off it. I'm a big fan of easy access to contraceptives, but being able to access the pill without a doctor does concern me. So yeah, someone's saying they noticed when they stopped taking the pill that they were having some adverse reactions. We've got Antonia on the line with us now. Antonia, can you relate to some of these stories that we're hearing, people suffering mental health side effects from contraceptives?
Yeah, I went through a whole journey where I was trying to work out what was really taking a damper on my mood. I realised it wasn't really my normal way of being, and I noticed that, like, I was a different person on the pill and even trying the bar. So, like, I got off hormonal contraceptives, like, became sort of normal, was too scared to try hormonal things again, and, like, but, like, tried the copper IUD, which hurt.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a real process for you, Antonia, that it took a while to really realise what was going on. Did you feel like you had, like, support from, like, medical professionals, doctors, that kind of thing?
There wasn't really, it didn't feel like there would be a regular person that I could talk to. So it's like the best advice that I had were other women who'd gone through the same things and tried different things. So it's like, I'm on a low hormone IUD, which I was afraid of, but, like, on the recommendation of someone who had it and, was conscious of the side effects there. That's how I got to a place now after all this time, in a place that I can be who I am.
Well, I'm glad things have definitely improved for you, Antonia, and, you know, you're absolutely not alone. We're hearing from so many people now on the text line who have very similar stories. Antonia, thank you very much for speaking with us. I want to get to an expert now, and joining us is Jayashree Kulkarni, who's a professor of psychiatry at Monash University. Professor, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
You've actually looked into contraceptives and mental health before. What did you find in your research?
So this is research that's actually still ongoing, but what we have done is looked at
different types of hormone contraceptives. So that's usually the pill, but it does include the straw that gets put under the skin and sometimes IUDs as well. And the impact of using these particular contraceptives on mental health. And so our study has been a progressive prospective study looking at the depressive symptoms or anxiety symptoms that women may experience if they take these particular products. There are other studies, of course, that are big epidemiological studies, in particular Danish study that's quite a large one by Skovland and group with about 1 million people in it. We have found connections between certain types of pill in women whose brains are sensitive to the hormonal effects. And that's not every woman, but it's some women.
And is there a difference across the different forms when you look at the combination pill, mini pill, IUDs?
Absolutely. So most pills, or the commonest form of pills, have got the two hormones, estrogen and progesterone. And some of the other things that you mentioned, like the mini pill or the IUD or the straw that goes under the skin, are progesterone only. So if we were going to have like a footy league ladder of the best to the worst, the worst complications and difficulties we've seen for women with depression and anxiety with the progesterone only pills. The best are where there is a combination of estrogen and progesterone in the pill, and in fact that where there's a natural estrogen, or estradiol is the name of the type of estrogen hormone, and that's the best.
So what's going on in our brain with these synthetic hormones and our own chemicals? Like how is it all interacting?
There's several factors involved here. So the synthetic hormones in the pills do interact with the natural receptors in the brain and the body. And let's not forget, these hormones are very potent in the brain. For a long, long time, people thought estrogen and progesterone were all about having babies and that was it. But that's not the case. They're very, very potent brain hormones. So they do have an impact of both synthetic and the natural form in terms of having an effect on brain chemicals and brain circuits that then determine behaviour, mood, symptoms, higher thinking, the whole damn lot. So these are very powerful substances in the brain, and the synthetics are working in the brain receptors.
You mentioned before predisposed factors that might influence whether or not a woman might be affected by depression. What kind of factors are we talking about?
Our research has been trying to answer that million-dollar question, like why do some women get depressed on this type of pill and other women don't? And we really think there's individual variation, with some women's brains being much more sensitive to their hormone, whether it's their natural hormones or whether it's taken in the form of a contraceptive. And I think the big thing that we keep talking about is early life trauma. There are many things that happen to a young girl, particularly, and we're talking now, you know, children, their brains are much more sensitive to what is going on in their immediate environment, and that's usually in the house. And so what happens if there is emotional abuse, emotional neglect, emotional invalidation, or worse, physical abuse, and even worse, sexual abuse? In those situations, there are hormones that really govern a person's response to how does a kid deal with that. And so starting right there, there are hormones that are changed in the brain. And from that change, then you get a downstream effect on the gonadal hormones, which is the estrogen, progesterone. As well as that, the early life trauma can change some of the circuits, the brain circuitry. So really, early life and then subsequent trauma builds up, and it makes this person's brain much more sensitive to the hormones. This is not the only factor, but this is one factor. There are genetic factors as well, that it runs in families. So premenstrual depressive disorder, for example, that's a premenstrual depression, is actually, there's a gene that's been identified. But again, it's a gene-environment interaction. So if you've got a lovely, nice, nurturing kind of environment, this gene may not become active. So you can get by without getting depressed premenstrually.
Okay, interesting. Let's hear a little more from the Hack audience now. We've got Grace on the line with us. Grace, how has it been for you? Have you also been on a bit of a journey here in terms of your mental health and contraceptives?
Yes, definitely. I think I was prescribed a pill, I think it was Levlen, one of the combined oral pills, when I was 16, just for heavy bleeding. And yeah, was not told enough information about that. And that kind of as an adult now in hindsight, it really did affect my mental health quite a lot.
Okay, so you are wishing that you just had a bit more info from doctors, medical professionals at that early age when you were first starting it?
Yeah. I was kind of told that it would be fine, that it would just help my bleeding, and then that would kind of be it. But now that I actually have been diagnosed with PMDD now, and looking back on it, I think it definitely made that like symptoms for me like a lot worse.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it's been such a battle, Grace, but I hope you're doing a lot better now. Thank you so much for sharing and talking with us. We're hearing from so many people, actually. Jess on Bidjigal Country says, I went on the pill recently and it was a long 3 or 4 months of challenging mental health to adjust to. Another person, Adrian, saying, I'm so glad you're talking about this because I've experienced this as a partner of a woman who suffers severely with mental health side effects as a result of an IUD, which is interesting. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Professor Jayashree Kulkarni, who's a psychiatrist. We're talking about mental health side effects from the pill. Professor Kulkarni, what do you make of the fact that there's still so much we don't know about these mental health impacts of a contraceptive that's been around for decades?
Drives me around the bend. It is about that preconceived notion that, oh, the pills are important for contraception. So when a new pill comes on the market, the predominant testing is obviously, importantly, is this a good contraceptive? Does it shut down ovulation? Does it make the uterine lining inhospitable for an implanted fetus and so on? So contraceptive, yes, tick. But what about looking at all the other things? And again, that blindness to thinking about these hormones as brain hormones or brain steroids has really stopped a whole lot of trials and consideration of mood, higher thinking, learning, all these activities that are brain activities from being considered in developing a new contraceptive. And it should be, because, you know, women's bodies are not just ovaries and uterus, you know, it's the whole damn thing. So we really, I think, being very short-sighted in not understanding more about this.
Do you have any advice for any women who are listening now who might have not drawn the link before and might be right now questioning whether their pill is having an impact on their mental health?
This is where validation of women is really important. So if women are listening to this, you got to trust your gut. If you are making the link, then stick by your own knowledge of yourself. You live with you. You know you. So you should be actually trying to get something to help you, which is change the pill. You know, there are a lot of different pills on the market and different people have different responses to those pills. So stick to your guns. Go and talk to your doctor and say, I have noticed this. I need to try a different type of contraceptive. And then have a think about what might work best for you.
And just finally, I mean, we know access to the pill is really important for women across the country. And from next month, women in Victoria are going to be able to access the pill without a prescription. What do you make of that development?
I'm kind of on the fence here, so you won't get a clear answer from me. I don't think women should have authoritarian, paternalistic control in controlling reproduction. So I'm pleased that this makes it easier for a woman to be in charge. That's a big tick. However, there's also all these complexities because, for example, I spend about 2 hours with a woman who is coming to my mental health clinic. Yes, that's a selected population, but, you know, we go through the whole early life story and the subsequent stories and her reactions to various hormones and so on and so on. That's a really detailed, in-depth, highly, you know, sort of specialised area of psychiatry even. And I don't know how a pharmacist is going to do that. And I hope there's going to be a nice quiet area for the pharmacist to talk to the woman about this and they're not yelling at each other across a crowded bench while everyone else is listening in.
Well, it's been great getting your take on all of this. Professor Jayashree Kulkarni, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And so many messages. Someone saying hearing all these women with similar stories is really validating. I started as a teenager and only now in my 30s I've figured out what has been going on with me. Another person saying I was on the pill for 15 years with no side effects but then came off it and my mental health has been absolutely shot. And someone else saying, I thought my bad mental health from the pill was my personality. Sorry to hear that too. And that is all we've got time for on Hack for now. I'll catch you next time. Hack.